Okay, Rabbi, so let's begin. Yeah. Let's begin. We're up to the Yoel. We're up to the end of the last few psukim Yoel. Powerful, powerful psukim, winding down the time of Yemos HaMashiach. Melech HaMashiach, Pasek, we're up to, let's review the psukim. Yesterday, last week, we didn't really cover too much ground. We just went over the psukim. We spoke about a few things. Let's not try to go through psukim much more, a little more detail. So let's really get, let's read the psukim very quickly. On page 258, page 258, Perek Dalet, Pasek Yudches. Let's read the psukim one more time. The Hoya, it will be Vayoyim Hahu Yitfu Hehorim Osis. The mountains will drip with wine. The Hagavois, the hills, Telachna Cholav, will flow with milk. The Cholafika Yehuda Yelchu, all of the valleys of Yehuda will flow. Yelchu will go also flow. Another word for flow is Mayim. Umayon Mibes Hashem Yetzed, there will be a fountain that will come forth from the Beis HaMikdash. We discussed many of these things last week on Friday. The Hishka, and it will water Es Nachal Hashitim. Okay, we're going to see again. So there are four different items mentioned. Wine, milk, water, and a Mayon. Pasuk Yutes, Mitzrayim L'Shemama Sihyeh. Egypt will be desolate. The Edom L'Midbar Shemama Tiyeh. Edom will also be a desert of a desert of desolation. Mechamas, a desolate midbar. Mechamas bnei Yehuda. Mechamas bnei Yehuda from the violence of bnei Yehuda. Asher shavchu dam naki biyartzam, due to the violence of bnei Yehuda. Asher shavchu dam naki biyartzam, who have poured as a punishment for what Egypt and Edom have done to the Jewish people. They have poured innocent blood in their land. Pasuk chaf Yehuda liolam teishev. Yehuda will now dwell, will be in a state of inhabitants forever. The Yerushalayim ledar vodar, for generation to generation. V'nikesi damam lo nikesi v'Hashem sheichein b'tzion. I have a lot of perushim on that pasuk. I'll spend some time on that. We'll get to that at the end. What exactly that means. Very, very interesting pasuk. Very fascinating pasuk. The last words of Yoel in reference to Yemos HaMashiach are the words V'nikesi damam lo nikesi v'Hashem sheichein b'tzion. So many ways to translate those words. Okay, let's go back to the Pasuk Yudches. Let's see the Mitzudos Dov in the Pasuk Yudches. Pasuk begins back on page 259. On page 259, on the very, very bottom of the Mitzudos Dov in Pasuk Yudches, Yitfu Heorim, the mountains will drip with wine. Yitfu Heorim Osis. We didn't get into the etymology of why the word osis means wine. As I mentioned last week, the only thing I can think of is what we're going to read this week's Haftorah. Yosis alayich eloikoyich. Yosis. So the sin, and the samach sometimes are interchangeable. Yayin yisamach levav enosh. Wine brings joy, brings simcha. There are two types of simcha. There's simcha and there is sosayin. What's the difference? Okay, that's not for now. There are many perushim what the difference is. What?
Isn't osis nectar? Like,
nectar?
Isn't there
a modern Hebrew word?
Brand name of fruit juices named
osis?
Yeah.
Juice
from nectar. Okay, all right, I accept. But over here, the Mitzudos David, Mitzudos Sion translates the word osis kain nikra hayayin. It refers specifically to wine. The chain al osis ki nichras. Consider, say we had it before. That's what Yoel is doing. Being that in the beginning he gave musa or even curses that at a certain time there's going to be a curse in the land due to the locust, where the wine will be cut off from man. So now he's giving words of Nechama, Ze l'uma ze. In the times of Mashiach, there will once again be a replenishment of the osis. What is the osis? Okay, obviously there are many perushim. It's a very rare word. We don't usually use the word osis in reference to wine. Why here are we using the reference to wine? I do not know. But it's hard to find the etymology of how the word osis comes to mean wine, if that's what the Mitzudos wants to suggest. As I said, the only thing I can think of is thing that the samach and a sin are phonetically similar, if you would exchange them, then it would be osis. Osis means, it means related to joy, not as a different type of joy. There's simcha and sosain. Famous Gemara in Masechta Sukkah, where there were two apikarsim, apminim, two apikarsim, were having a debate between themselves, who is greater? Is Simcha greater? One fellow whose name was Simcha, and the other fellow whose name was Sosain. And they were debating with each other who is greater. And each one was citing psukim in Tanakh, which proved, indicated that they are a higher level of joy. And that Gemara, all the Mepharshim tell us, is not to be taken literally. Dvarim ha'imdim v'rumay shel olam. There are great secrets in Hashem's creation and the difference between sosain and simcha.
The Malbim in his sefer, Shemes in the Daf, he explains every
Carmel. Even sefer. Here we have the Malbim right here. We have the source.
Yeah, even if you think it's redundant, it's not.
No, that's everything has a purpose. Each one has a different connotation. There's a gra on this. I think one says different perushim. One represents the beginning of simcha, and one represents the shleimus. When you start a mesechta, a new mesechta, there's a certain joy that comes at the time of a new beginning, and then there's a joy that comes when you reach, when you conclude, when you are messiah. Which one means what? So you should know, the Mepharshim, they disagree. Some say Simcha means the beginning, and Sosain means the end. And some commentators say just the opposite. Sosain is the beginning, and Simcha is the shleimus.
Joy or happiness?
Joy versus happiness. In English, there are two terms. So what is joy?
Yeah,
joy
is...
Joy is
temporary, but happiness is more
permanent. Okay. Someone said also that Sosain is a spurt. You get a boost. You take a pill and you're on a high, right? It's a spurt. Simcha is a natural feeling of serenity. Others say sasa means external joy. Okay, you dance in the street. Simcha is you're calm, you're quiet. It's internal. Okay, there are many perushim. But it's interesting is that if you want to say over here, if this idea is correct, which I really do not know, if this idea is so that we can exchange the sin of simcha for a samach, that's not unprecedented. There are many examples in Chazal.
The word sota.
Sota. Sota. So what sota is?
Samach and sin. In the Chumash it's spelled with a sin. In the Gemara it's spelled with a samach.
The samach. Oh, interesting. Okay. So there are different, right, so that's right, it goes straight, correct. Sot. Sot. Okay, so it's not...
It's never spelled with a samach in the Chumash. Never.
So it's not unprecedented that there is a drasha that you can interchange a sin with a samach. And if wine here is spelled with two samachs, if we would be so liberal to say that it could be read as two sins, that means there's a new quality of wine. Wine is yayin yisamach levav enosh. It brings simcha. Here we're describing a different quality of wine where it brings sosain. So now, after we figure out the difference between simcha and sosain, it's telling us that in this world, in the way we know it, the most yayin to bring a person is simcha. The yayin yisamach levad enosh, but le'asilavoi yayin will take on a new form, a new koyach, where it can bring a person l'day sosain. Now, again, what is exactly the difference? I don't know. Okay, because some will tell you that sosain is a lower level than simcha. Maybe that's what it means. Maybe it means that le'asilavo, it's going to be different. I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas. But it's interesting to see that you can say yayin relates to both the element of simcha and the element of sasan. That's very important because this whole world went downhill with yayin. When Noach came out of the teva, what was the first thing that he did? Vayochel Noach ish adama vayita koren. He planted a vineyard and he drank from the wine. And he became intoxicated, his children came and saw what happened, and all went downhill from there. Yayin. La'asilavo, the last...
Same thing with Lot.
What? Same thing with Lot. So, and Yaakov Avinu, the brachos, Vayove lo yayin vayesht. Where did he get wine from? All in Farshimis. It's a very big mystery. Where did Yaakov bring Yitzchak yayin? Everything that he had, his mother gave him. Aseli, his mother, go take from Shnei Gidolim Zim, yayin vayesht. Bigger mystery. Where did Lavan? Where did Benois Loit? Where did they get wine in the cave?
Nest.
So you see, wine keeps on coming up over and over again. All the critical events in history all revolve around wine. Right. That's why by Chassan and Kala,
water with them. They went traveling. They only took wine
because they can dilute it.
Because you diluted water was not potable, and this way it was like an
right.
But you had to have water. You had to find water somewhere right. To dilute
so
it with.
If you had the water, there was the yain. It was not but water.
Was not like a Yari, the Chazal.
Well, the Chazal,
okay, right. Well, Chazal said that it's supposed to really be, right, three, right, it's not bottle. Either three parts water and one part wine, or four parts water and one part. We mentioned this from Rabbi Belsky. Rabbi Belsky is a fascinating, I remember the details. On Pesach, we discussed that if you want to dilute your wine, how much could you dilute? Wine today, and it should still be considered. Well, how much of the alcohol content? So Rybelski says, I think up to 2.5%. He has a very fascinating mathematical calculation of how much alcohol is standard in wine, in real wine, pure wine, and Chazal allow you to dilute it. Now, even though today, by the way, today we don't dilute wine. Real wine, you go to a wine store. There's no such thing in today's day and age of diluting wine because we, the Chazal say, Miskatnu Hadoros, the potency of alcohol, of the grapes today is very, very weak, even in the best vineyards in France, wherever you'll go. So today, I think it's unheard of to, if you want to buy quality wine, they will not dilute, no such thing as diluting wine. But in the time of Chazal, it was impossible to drink wine if it was not diluted. At kidei kach, you could not even make a bracha bori priya gofen. If you make a bori priya gofen on wine that was not diluted, a bracha levatala, because it's not drinkable, it's not edible. You had to dilute it with water in order that it should be edible, and otherwise you don't make a bracha, or you make a shahako. To make a bori priya gofen, you have to dilute it with, you must dilute it.
But even 50 years ago, yeah. Bought wine in the store was 20% alcohol.
Oh, sorry, Bell's right. So, right. So, today, I mean, is what is the average alcohol content of natural, the most natural wine? He has a very fascinating calculation. Thus, he says, therefore, since even though today our wines are weak, but you cannot, halacha does not change. Halacha does not change. So, even though our wines are very weak today and we do not need to dilute our wines, but since halacha does not change, and in time of Chazal you are permitted to dilute wine, you are obligated to dilute wine, either three parts water or four parts water to one part wine. So if you take today, he made a calculation, what in industry is the average alcohol content of wine that is not diluted? And he came up with a number. And then he said, take that number, and then you can dilute that according to halacha. Let's say up to four parts water and one part wine, which comes out that today's day and age that until you go below 2.5% of alcohol content, it's still called yayin. It's not grape juice. It's still called yayin. So therefore, all these like these light the Concord cow.
You can buy the grocery store. It's not considered alcohol. You don't
need a license. Need a license, but you do need a license for cow, right? It's 3%.
2.5%.
Less than. No, it's 3%. It's 3%. It's just above. It's just above his threshold. I don't know if Kedem when they made the one if they made calculations. But he made his, it's very, very fascinating, his cheshbonis. He was such a genius. Unbelievable. The things that he came up with, no one, it's so sick today, there's no one like him today. There's no
people
like him.
Still add water to the wine when they make it.
Yeah.
Because it's
yeah.
Too strong.
No,
wait. They need a drop.
Yeah.
A teapot. That's not a Kabbalistic concept. Yayin is din, mayim is rachamim. You want to be.
Pogrom,
that's when someone drank and you put it back into the bottle. No, but there's also a Kabbalistic concept of that yayin is din. Yayin represents din. Mayim represents rachamim. And you have to dilute din with rachamim. So you put a teeny drop of water.
Yeah.
So put 3 drops of water. These are Kabbalistic things, but that's not because of you diluting it to take away the taste. The taste has to be yayin. Okay, any event, this is a fascinating thing. We have over here a whole new word. The mountains will drip with yayin. Mountains, what does mountains and yayin have one thing to do with another? Pshat, I do not know, but Drush, everyone knows that, you know, every time it says in the Chazal the word mountains, Esa Einai El Heharim, Heharim in Chazal alludes to the Avos. The Avos are called the mountains. Heharim is also Hahorim, Lashon of a parent. I don't know the exact etymology, the exact grammar, how it works out, but Chazal often associate mountains with the Avos. And therefore it says that B'yomahu Yitu Hehadim Asis is that the mountains, the Avos, will drip with Yayin. The Avos, whatever Yayin represents, this is we're going to connect ourselves to our roots. The hills is the Imohois. Okay, it's a Feresh in Shir HaShirim. Medaleg Al Hehorim Mekabetz Al HaGevois. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he skips over the mountains and he jumps on over the hills. And the Medrash Rabba there says, it refers to Hashem will bring, it refers there to Hashem will bring Mashiach in the Zuchus of the Ovois and the Imohois. So here it says, Las Lovat is going, the mountains will drip with wine. Wine is going to be associated with the Ovois, and the hills is going to be associated with the Imohois. And that makes a lot of sense because a woman nurses. A mother nurses her child with milk. And therefore, that's why it says here, we're going to connect ourselves to the Imohois. We'll be nursing once again from Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. All of the streams of Yehuda, Yelchu Moim, will flow with water. Let's go back to the Mesudos. I'll get too sidetracked. Keep getting sidetracked. My fault, of course. But let's go back into the words over here. Yitru Harim, go back to Pasuk Yitches in page 259 in the Mesudos. Yitru Harim, Asis, Ritzot Lema, Harim, Anav, Yigdulu, Beharim. Many grapes will grow in the mountains. The Hayayin Yen Noitev Mehem, and wine will drip from the grapes while they're still connected to the trees. Okay, he's saying pshat in the pasuk, very, very fascinating. Pshat in the pasuk, there's going to be a lot of grapes, and the grapes will drip, and there's going to be wine flowing down the mountains. V'hu'inyan guzma, he says, this is an exaggeration. Te'lachna chalav sham yeh mireh shamein, te'lachna will flow with milk, will be a pasture, delicious pasture for the animals. V'sisrabeh chalev hatzayin, and the sheep will be overflowing with milk, and they will release the milk on the valleys, and the valleys will flow down with milk. It will begin to flow with water like it was in the past. And then it goes to the next page. We go to the next pasuk, Mayon. The fountain, who hanachal, on page 261, umayon who hanachal ha'amur b'nevuas yicheskel who amokor ha'amur b'nevuas zecharia. We mentioned this last week, and that this refers to the little trickle. This is a famous gemara. Which mesech is it? I forgot which mesech is it. Describes this, the trickle of water that will come out of the kodesh hakodashim, and it will expand, get larger and larger. It starts like the antenna of an ant, and then it gets larger. It reaches the size eventually of a cord, of a thread. Then it gets larger to the size of a rope, and then it turns into a river, and then the river is where only you can walk in your ankle deep, and then it gets to a river where it's knee deep, and then it gets to a river where it's gushing. What? Yuma, where a daf? Chapter and verse. How can I know the daf? Pin test. Okay, just joking. So, and then it'll turn into a river that's gushing, where even a boat, even the big boats are not going to be able to pass through the Shiv because of the intense current that comes through this river. The Hishkome Amayin Azayashke es Emek HaShitim will water the valley of Shitim, Lios Nimshach Hanar, it'll flow like river. So just get we'll advance on what we see in the Farshim. Shitim is not a good place. What happened to the Jewish people in Shitim? They worshipped the Avodah Zarah called Baal Pe'or. Baal Pe'or is described as the most disgusting Avodah Zarah in the world. The way you worship the Avodah Zarah is by relieving yourself in front of the Avodah Zarah. Once a person, when it talks about a person, they stopped off and they saw the sun. Oh, let me go in and pay homage to the Avodah Zarah. He goes in and he wiped his nose. He wiped himself on the nose of the Avodah Zarah, and the priest said, "Our entire career, there was no one that worshipped the Avodah Zarah with such hidurim." They gave him the award for the ultimate service. What kind of crazy, crazy thing is this? And Moshe Rabbeinu is described as Moshe. Where was Moshe Rabbeinu? I said this over many times. One of my favorite verloch. It's a very powerful musavar. There are many perushim. I am part of the Soli Perushim, but this one for some reason resonates with me. And Moshe Rabbeinu was buried mul. Yeah. You laying this on Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah by Yikber Say Bagai B'Yeretz Moyov mul Beis Pa'ar. Moshe was buried right opposite the church of Pa'ar. What kind of burial place is that? Today, you know, you go to bury Har Zesim, Har Menuchos. You can't get there, so you go to Beis Shemesh, you'll go here, you'll go there. Okay, you're in America, you know, there's certain places in America. I heard to buy a kever now in Judah, in the section of Yaakov Kamenetsky. I heard it, there's no kvarim, but if you want to get a kever, it'll be at least $100,000. There are no kvarim anyway. It's all, everything is very kamat filled up. But if there would be a person...
That's why it costs so much.
What?
That's why it's the most expensive cemetery.
There's no place left. No, there are. I'm sure in that cemetery there are places left. I've never come probably.
Yeah, but they charge a lot more. The newer cemeteries are like a few hundred dollars a plot, and this is going to cost you.
Because there, the Gedolei Mamash, the Gedolei Yisrael are there. The Gedolei Yisrael are there. There are nine rows.
Where do you get a few hundred plot?
It's called the Briska.
Under
$400.
It's
absolutely.
My shul sells for $500,
$400.
Buy it tomorrow.
An investment?
You do Montefiore.
If you're going to buy, then it's going
to
go up like skyrockets.
For who? Everyone I pick?
All right, it's the Briska Cemetery. There are nine rows. Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rav Simcha Soloveitchik is around the corner. He sits in the coil. He has the coil around the corner. He's in charge. He's in charge of the cemetery. It's called the Briska Chelka. He's putting out a sefer now, very soon, on the first nine rows. A sefer, Mam Shev, on the first nine rows of the cemetery. Everyone who's buried there, a bio and a picture and an elaboration on all. You take me there. My grandmother was. You take me there. That cemetery, the first nine rows.
Where was cemetery?
In Mount Judah.
Mount Judah.
Mount Judah. Interboro. Cyprus. Interboro. Exit 2. Cyprus Avenue. It's right next to Rav Meitzig. Right next to Yankov Yosef. He's down the road.
Right.
He's down the road. That's a beautiful cemetery. I was blown away. Where Yankov Yosef is buried, it's so elegant. What? They don't make cemeteries like that.
You have
it really is.
Down the road, you have even older Union Field.
It's really that's what it is. That's what it is. It's really, it's really, really beautiful. It's like really, it has charm.
That is.
How often do you have a cemetery that has such charm? It's not a joke. Mount Judah doesn't have any charm. It's interesting, but it doesn't. It's not a. But Union that Union was called Union Field.
Yeah.
It really has this charm, these big, massive trees.
Yeah, a lot of trees makes it.
And the way the layout, the mausoleum, the way the layout, these oilings, it's very, very unique. You don't see something like this. You really don't see something like this. Okay, let's go forward. Let's move forward. Okay.
Now,
It's impossible. There's nothing left. It's impossible. Nothing left on Menuchas. They're making new layers, expanding. They're making these layers and mountains. All these new techniques they have. Whatever. All right. But in any event, it says Zayashka es emek hashitim. So therefore, what I want to go tell you about Moshe was in Mul Beis Pe'or. What's the pshat? Moshe is buried opposite a church. What's the pshat? Shad is giving you, is telling you who Moshe Rabbeinu was. Now again, I ain't Panam Torah. What exactly is Par? We have to know because we're learning about Shittim now, so it's very important because it's interesting. The Torah ends off also with Moshe was Mulpeis Par, and here he's describing Acharis Hayamim, and he's also alluding to Par. He's alluding to Shittim, the place where Par is located. What's going on here? What is Pa'ar? What exactly is this? Is the avoid the Zara of Pa'ar? It represents the absence or a shita in life that there should be no such thing as discipline. There should be no such thing of Musa. What is Musa? What is the essence of Musa? What is Musa? To shuckle? To bang your hand? That's not what Musa. Musa means discipline. Discipline. It means you wake up every morning at this moment in time. Every second is accounted for. Everything you eat is measured. Who is in control of your life? Your taivos or your mind? Who is guiding your life? Who is driving the car? Who is running? So Musar is, you're in control. If I want to get up 6 o'clock, I get up 6 o'clock on the dot. No games. Not 6:01. There's no such thing in the world of Musar as a snooze button. It doesn't exist. Sorry about that. Musar, Nick Schulness. Sorry about that. I don't know. What is Musar? Musar in the world of Musar, there is no such thing in this world as a snooze button. You want to get up at 6 o'clock, you get up at 6 o'clock. What kind of mishigas is this? You get up at 6 o'clock, push the button. 6:09. You push the button again. You push the button again. On this aisle over here, you adjust exactly the snooze button. This is not my alarm clock in the morning. So you can adjust how long when you push snooze. It should be for 5 minutes, for 4 minutes, for 3 minutes. B'diyuk. Today you could not sell an alarm clock if it did not have a snooze button. This is keneged kol ha-Torah kula. Mamish keneged kol ha-Torah kula, that there should be something in this world called a snooze button. Because that is an absence of discipline. What is Pa'ar? Pa'ar is no such thing, period, as discipline. You let your taivas control you. This is life. If Hashem gave you taivas, enjoy this world.
Everything goes.
Ad kidei kach, you have to go to the bathroom. That's also discipline. Think about it. If you have to go to the Beis Akisei, so you're going to control yourself. You're going to wait 3 minutes before you walk down the hall. Why? I have a taiva to release. Release what I need to release. Let it go. Who cares that it's going to make a mess and it's going to smell? Who cares? Let it go. Taiva. Ad kidei kach. That's what Baal Par is. Relieve yourself in front of the Avodah Zarah to show this world is a world of taiva. If it happens to be, you have to control yourself. It's just out of practicality. Not because there's any benefit in controlling yourself. Who was Moshe Rabbeinu? The Ribbono Shel Olam is delivering a hesped for Moshe Rabbeinu. You know who told me this svara? Who told me this svara? Rav Chaim Siegel, my Rebbe in high school. Rav Chaim Siegel, Zichron Levracha, my 12th grade Rebbe, he told us this yisoid. Who is giving Moshe Rabbeinu a hesped? The Ribbono Shel Olam.
Right.
Moshe dies. What is Hashem's hesped? Number one, Eved Hashem. He was an Eved. And the Hesed was, he's buried Mul Beis Pe'or. There is no one as disciplined. There is no greater Baal Musa. There's no greater student of a ritual Salanter than Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the complete diametric opposite of Beis Pe'or. Beis Pe'or is the benchmark. The world's example of complete Hefkeros. to go to the bathroom in front of the Avodah Zarah is a show, a world of Hefkeiros. Moshe is Mul Beis Par, the complete diametric opposite. That's Moshe. That's exactly what we're discussing the times of Yimos HaMashiach. Yimos HaMashiach, you're not going to like this nasty comment I'm about to make now. Ready? Brace yourself. Even the Hasidim will become Litvaks. Are you going to walk out now? Don't walk out, Rabbi Yisaki. I'm sorry. They already are. They already are in Hasidim. That's exactly what we have now. Today, all Litvaks are Hasidim. Leading up to Mashiach, is Pashut, right now, all Litvaks have already become Hasidim. No, it's a way of life. It represents the Simchas Achayim. It represents the Litvaks are Musar. That was the real, that was the truth. There's no such thing as a Litvak today. It doesn't exist today, a Litvak today. No such things. Litvak was a student of Yishol Salanter. Pure Musar. A Musar Shtibel. You go into a room with there's no svarim. And what do you do in the room? OCD. You just repeat words of Musa. I'm a nothing. I'm a garnished. You repeat yourself a million times over.
And the Lashon Hara, the end Shagunish, who say he's Shagunish?
This is Musa. Hasidim, we don't understand the roots. Hasidim couldn't take this. This is not the way you serve Hashem. Also, it's more than that. It's not for the Hamoina. Musa is only for very... The reason why the Litvish Mahalach is not all that successful... It's not. There's no such thing today as a pure Litvak. Rabbi Shaul Slanta would come today. He could not even find one person he can say, "You're one of mine. You're one of mine." No way. Don't. You can't find me one person left like that. That's a real, the real, real Baal Musa. Kelm. No way. I'm sorry. I can show you many examples that he's not. No way. What?
He claims.
Not who is this? Rav Kefir. A different machane. You don't know Rav Kefir. A different machane. There's no person that's a real Baal Musa. Rav Dessler died. He gave it Tzavah. He was a real student of Kelm. A real Prat. A real Baal Musa. He gave it Tzavah when he died that there should be no Nusach on the Matzeva. The Kelmers, the real, their Matzevus were blank. Mamish blank.
What's the name?
I don't even know if they had the name either. They had the name?
You don't need a name.
Who does need a name? You need a stone to indicate it's Tameh. It's a Makam of Tumah. You need a name? Who says you need a name? I'm not even sure that he has a Messiah. You know where it is. And after a couple of generations, after, you don't know, who cares? The real Bali Musa did not have anything written on their Matzevus.
He wanted to be buried next to Chassid.
He did?
He wanted to be buried next to her tribe of five members.
Who, Rav Dessler?
Yeah.
Okay, so fine. That's the high luchud for high luchud. He did not want, but anything to be written on his head. So was the Chazor still alive when he was nifter?
What?
Was the Chazor in here still alive when he was nifter, Rav Dessler?
I believe so.
He was nifter, so they told the Chazor in Ish that they're going to be fulfilled the Savah. They're not going to write anything on this Matzeva, nothing. So the Chazanir says, no, you have to write a Nusach. He says, why? He's a Kelmer, and from the real Baal Musa. Here, the Chazanir says, there's no one left in this world that appreciates what he was, to Kelm, what the real Musa is. So there's no one left to appreciate what it means not to have a Nusach and a Matzeva. So you have to, you can, if there was people around who were from that world appreciated what it meant, that you don't write anything on a Matzeva, such Bali Musa, okay, there's no one left in this world that appreciates what this means, what it was all about, what Kelm was all about, what the Muslim was all about, so therefore forget it, write a Nusach on Matzeva.
When I was learning with Rav Shulchan's son, Tam Chalamot, he always used to say, I take my kids to the Bronx Zoo, I want to find a cage marked Litvak.
A cage?
In other words, a pure Litvak.
A pure Litvak
in the zoo. Okay,
there's no one there.
Anyway.
So today we're all Hasidim. We all live with an approach, a whole different approach of life, of Simchas Achayim. We don't emphasize, we learn Musa, but we do not make it the Iker. Because we can't survive. Make it the Iker, we go out of our minds. We mamash go out of our minds. But in Yimos HaMashiach, look what he writes over here, Yo-Yo. In Yimos HaMashiach, A Mayan is going to go forth, mi beis Hashem yetze v'hishka es nachal hashitin. It's going to water nachal hashitin. It's alluding to Pa'or. What happened by Baal Pa'or. What happened by Pa'or, by Baal Pa'or means an absence of discipline. And this Mokoyim is going to come to life again, just like Moshe Rabbeinu was buried there, Mul Beis Pa'or, in Shittim, in the area of Shittim, to show whatever this represents, Pumfakert, Musar, discipline, the Nachal, that element of where Moshe Rabbeinu is buried, who Moshe is the Mul of Beis Pa'or, will become relevant in the times of Moshiach, when Klal Yisrael will return to an approach of Musar. Of course, it means Musar together with Simcha. The Gilu Bira'odah. No one's taking away the milus of what Hasidim are all about. Hasidus, unbelievable. We're all Hasidim today. But it's hard. It's too difficult. In the times of Mashiach, Shittim will become very relevant. When you'll start seeing in our lives the return to Musar, then you really know Mashiach is around the corner. And it's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. We're definitely turning the corner. There's becoming an awareness because we've really gone way to the extreme where we've abandoned Musar. And that's the cycle of life. When you hit rock bottom is always where there's always a recognition. Like you can't, Alcoholics Anonymous. What's the side of Alcoholics Anonymous? You can't go up until you hit rock bottom. This is the Yisoid. You got to hit rock bottom before you can really understand where you're going.
That seems to be the case of Mashiach as well.
As well, right, in many elements. So in the world of Musar, we really hit rock bottom. We hit a time where there's no Musar in this world. There's no Musar. It's hefkeris. And people are beginning, I think to some degree, you know, maybe it's time to devote significant time to Musar. Significant time, not just blah, blah, blah. And that when that's going to happen, that's it. That's exactly what it means. Now we have a Mayan. See, the physical here is going to be Mayan. I'm telling you, I want to do all the drush, I want to do all the pshat. But Yelchu Mayan, Mayan is Torah. We're living at a time now when there's the V'chalafika Yehuda Yelchu Mayan. Hoy kol tzame lechu lemayim. This Torah, wherever, look at the bookcases over here. You know how much, resources went into to produce what we have over here on the bookcases over here? This is a product of this generation. All the Svarim over here came out. It's all modern stuff. Igros Moshe, we're dealing over our generation. We're dealing over here. Look what's going on in the art school. How much, this is a product of this generation. It's Mayim. There's water everywhere. But Musar, that comes next. First comes
self-abnegation.
What?
Is there more to Musa than self-abnegation?
I don't know what self-abnegation
is. You're describing Musa
as discipline. Musa is discipline. That's the title of Musa, discipline. Not self-abnegation. No, that's not
Musa.
That's just
part of it. Here.
Part of it. That's just a technique, in fact. That's what is a technique. Adrabah, the godless Adam. Man should be great. That was also a part of the Muslim movement. There were different groups of the Muslim movement. There was some who the technique was Narvardik, where the technique was the shiftless Adam. But Slobodka was also part of the Muslim movement.
Right.
But their technique was Godless Adam, the greatness of man. Man is very great. And therefore, that's also Musa. If you're a great person, you have to behave in a certain way. That also impressed upon your self-discipline. A great person doesn't do certain things. You behave yourself in a certain way. These are techniques, but all under the umbrella of one word, discipline. This Musar is discipline. Doesn't mean you're nothing. It doesn't mean you're a Baal Gaiva. It means discipline. And there are techniques to get you there, and each person is different. Different strokes for different folks. It's not a contradiction.
Anything else. Someone like Ralph Finkel, he didn't have discipline.
He did. I know. I've not seen Finkel.
Yeah.
The old one. This part of Slobodka. Of course.
So he wasn't.
Altar.
What?
The altar. He was the spitz of discipline.
So why would
the pinnacle of discipline?
So you wouldn't have said there was no Musar in the world when he came in the world and people like that.
Are you so Solander? He was even on top of that. Rabbi Shaul Salanta. There was a, but the Musav movement were for Yechidim. The Musav movement never spread to the world. It was isolated to very select individuals who were able to handle it. Chassidim spread like fire to the entire world. Like just when a whole world took
off. I'm having trouble with it. You can be a chassid and have tremendous discipline. So I, yes. I don't see.
Because
I don't
the chassid.
I don't see why it's like, you know.
What is the focus?
Even within chassidus, there were different.
Of course, of course. The goal is shleimus. The goal is shleimus. But what is the focus? There's a rule in this world. You cannot have everything. You cannot. Everything in this world is a trade-off. We don't live in a perfect world. If you're going to devote all of your time to one approach, you're going to be lacking. There's no one, there's almost no one, in fact, no one that has everything, not in any dimension. And therefore, when it comes to the world of Musar, there's Musar, and there is the approach of Simcha. Now, they go together. They go together. The bigger Baal Musa you are, the more. I'm not saying the word Simcha is the right word. It's not the right word.
This balance thing that.
But what is the approach in the world of Hasidim? The approach is don't focus that you're nothing. Just you have to live with Simcha. You have daven b'simcha, live b'simcha, and overlook all of your chesronos. Overlook them. Now, the chassidim today learn musar. There's nothing to talk about. Yeah, of course, you have to go and do tshuva, and you have to correct yourself. But that's not the focus. By the balei musar, the focus is your chesronos. And when you're going to focus on your chesronos and your deficiencies, it's going to take away from your simcha sachayim. You're not going to be dancing in the streets.
Yeah,
it can cause depression. Sure. The Musar movement never spread. Never. It was only select individuals. It's not for the Hamoinam. The movement of Hasidus spread throughout the entire world. That's why they felt so threatened. The Gra and many other groups, they felt that it was out of control. Out of control, you get caught up in Simcha and serve Hashem with joy. People start doing crazy things. And they started completely ignoring any element of Musa. There has to be a balance. There's always a balance. The question though is which one is the focus, which one is the Iker, and which is the Tofel. Because in this world, the Hamoyin Am cannot have both. You have to put your attention on one and not the other. Today, we're all Hasidim. The biggest Litvak today is a Chassid. There's nothing to talk about. Nothing to talk about. You know they say gets credit for this? I mean, you talk about this for days. The Gra, when he went and he fought Hasidim, fought them with all of his might, wasn't because he didn't believe in what Hasidim was all about. It was, he was fighting for that balance. He was fighting there should be a proper balance. He knew that the Hamoyin Am cannot handle
Rabbi Shaul Salanta. But he thought it was a continuation of Sabbathian. It was right after.
I don't know. There's a lot of talk about it. Some of them.
Kabbalah. This
he learned Kabbalah to grow up.
There's a lot to say. There's a lot of discussion.
There were certain Hasidim who used to do tumble sauces.
Right.
Chassid and his people used to do that. That was part of their ritual.
All right, okay, whatever it is. But today, there's no doubt about it, we all are Hasidim. We don't dress like Hasidim. We don't learn Rav Tzadok's. We don't learn Hasidish Svarim necessarily. Hasidim, they also have a tendency, like Rav Shaul Zev says, they have a tendency to focus on the Yoni Kabbalah. That's really a side thing. I don't know how that happened. That's not really... I don't know how that came, but somehow Hasidim, they latched on to Kabbalah. And the truth is, Kabbalah has nothing to do with what Hasidus is all about. It really doesn't. It has nothing to do with it. Why they latched on to it? It's a big, like you said, the girl learned the same Kabbalah. The girl learned the same Kabbalah. What?
You mean in a superficial sort of way, right?
Yeah. But they learn, like they focus on...
For the emotional high of it.
Maybe why? Maybe that's why. Because that's what gives you an emotional high when you focus on Kabbalah. But the truth is Kabbalah has nothing to do with the approach of the ideology of chassid, of chassidim. There's nothing to do with chassidus. There's nothing to do with that. It's to live b'simcha and don't focus on your chesronos. Like what we do. What do we all do? We focus on our chesronos. We come Rosh Yom Kippur. We clap al chait. We really delve deep into our hearts and work on ourselves. We shake when it's Elul, so we feel the Pachar Adin. If you don't feel the Emes Hadin, it means you're lacking in Musa. That's what it means. You're lacking. Now, it doesn't mean you're a chassid, because chassidim also have an obligation to learn Musar. But it means you're lacking in Musar. If you really felt the Musar, you would feel the Emes Hadin. So what does it mean then? It means that we're more noited to focus on the good, on the simcha, than to dwell and depress ourselves with Musar. That is the approach of chassidim. There's nothing to talk about. So we're all chassidim today. But we recognize every so often, we really recognize that this is not taking us down a good path. We need Musar. It's good for a tekufa, but when you get a little bit older, a little bit more mature, you realize, okay, I'm now settled in the olam of simcha and emotion. I now got to get my bearings in place. It's time for a shtikl Musar. We could die to feel the Emes Hadin also. And this, the same way it's a cycle, it's a healthy cycle in the life of a human being, every individual, it's a cycle in the world, in Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael now we're holding in the matzav of simcha, of not focusing on our chesroinus. But the tide is changing because we feel lacking. There's something lacking. We want more. We want something very deeper. And that's really the Muslim movement. And the pasuk over here says, you want to say there's a nevuah of Yoel. There's going to be Mayim. Hoy called Samuel Luchula Mayim. And then at the end comes, a Mayon goes forth. And where does it go? We would never know. The fact that Yoel says its target is Shittim. What is Shittim? Pa'ar. What is Pa'ar? Hefkerus. The Mokom Shel Hefkerus. This has to be purified. We have to purify the Hefkerus. How do you purify the Hefkerus? Like Moshe Rabbeinu. He was Mul Beis Pa'ar. He was the Baal Musar. And that is where he ends off with the Yemos HaMashiach. That's what's going to be. Yeah. And it says Harav. Right. He would never ever allow himself to have that.
But it doesn't say Zatzal.
Doesn't say Zatzal. It just says his name. So they probably made something like a pshara. Uh-huh. The real Bali Musa, they had either nothing on their matseva, or maybe they just had their name. Right. What do you find writing a name on a matseva? Find wisdom of card to write a name on a matseva. By Rachel, he says he put a matzev al kivurasa. He matzeves kivuras Rachel ad hayom hazeh. Yaakov, he wrote Rachel on the matzeva. Does it say anywhere in Chazal that he etched into the stones Rachel?
Says it's just a marker.
A marker.
That's the mountain.
And there's a mesorah.
No, the stone is just a marker.
It's a marker.
You should belong to the place.
The place is Tomei, it's Tumah. And you have to know, Kohen may not go there. And also to know, this is the Mokoyim. You should know where to go daven. This is the Mokoyim. And there's a mesorah. There's a mesorah. This is the Mokoyim. You go, you write, you etch words into a stone. Where does it say to do this? This is a modern minhag. This is a modern thing.
A thousand years.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, well, really, how far does it go back? You have to know. The oldest matseva we have is only 1,000 years, I believe.
I'm sorry, what?
The oldest matseva with words on it. It's not more than a little bit more than 1,000 years, I believe.
No, it was 2,000. They found it.
Marami Ramberg. They have a matseva. Marami Ramberg. Is that one of the oldest matsevas?
Worms they have from 1080.
Okay, so it's 1,000 years.
But they have before that.
They have before that.
They have to know Amaran.
Yeah.
No, who wrote the matsevas? Other than Amaran.
Much later,
he's who wrote them? There were stones. There was a Mesoira. There was a tradition. This is Rabbi Akiva's kever. This is Rashi's kever. There were no words written on it. And then later on, 1,000 years ago, they wrote down the Rambam. They wrote down the Rambam was only 700 years ago. They wrote down the names. And today we make it fancy schmancy. Today we redo it. They've all been redone.
Even have pictures.
I have everything. But I don't believe there is a Mukar, not that I know of, there's a Mukar that Yaakov Avinu, the first Mukar for the Matseva was Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu put a kevel kavu asa. By Sarah doesn't say anything. What does it say by Sarah? He buried her, period. Doesn't say anything. Doesn't even put a stone. It was a cave. He put her in the cave. Vizehu. It was a cave, and that's the end. He did not even have to put a stone because she was buried in the cave. Vizehu. He closed the cave up. Here, he put a stone on top of the road. She died on the road. She buried her. And it was Machadesh. She put a stone. The people in Mitzrayim, they have Matzevis. 600,000 people who died in Egypt. Is there any record anywhere of Matzevis for the 600,000 people who died in Egypt?
No, they were
more. What? I mean, people who died on the road in the Midbar. And Egypt, there were millions. Right? On Chamushim. So in Egypt, there are records of Kvarim, of Matzevis, stones. We never heard of anything like this. Okay, but in any event, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. He's Mul Beis Pe'ar. Let's go further in the Mitzvot.
Chazon Ish died a few months before.
What?
Chazon Ish died a few
before,
months.
Before, so Kenapi. Kenapi Chazon, it was someone else then. It was someone else. I read the Dessler book, or the Dessler on the biography article. Someone wrote a biography about Dessler. It's a very good biography. And Finkelman, maybe? It's a very good biography. So that biography is different, because that biography, whoever wrote it, didn't know him. Never met him, never saw him. So it's basically, it's a research project. And there's no negiyah. So on the one hand, it's better, because there's not no negiyah nadavar. I didn't know him. I was hired to do a research project.
Yeah, but the research he did were from Talmidim.
Okay, but since it's not firsthand, it's not the same.
Revival Mendelovich.
The research project.
Jonathan Rosenblum wrote it.
He never met him.
Beautiful writing. But
he never met him.
Yeah, but he spoke to all of
them. Interviewed the Talmidim. But it's not the same if you knew the person firsthand. If you knew the person firsthand and you're a good writer, it would come out so much different. We all know that.
The way you write, the way you express it,
you know that. What also the problem? There's a problem with that. That's your take. It's your take on the person. You had this relationship with him. He did not have that same relationship with other people. If someone else would write a book, they would write a completely different book. So when you're an outsider, you're not no gebedavar, you're mildless and chesroinus. How you write over a biography of a person, you know, different types. Let's go further in the Mitzvot David.
If you knew the person and you're writing a biography, you're basically writing your
perspective.
Yes.
By yourself. You're writing about yourself. You're not really writing about the person. So that is a Milo and a Chasaran.
One of the Talmidim wrote a biography about Reb Simcha.
Yeah.
I read it.
Yeah. That was his version.
Yeah.
his take on him. I have a different relationship with him.
And they could both be right.
You're both right, of course. They're
no,
very complex.
They could both be wrong.
Absolutely. And the more complex the person is, the more it is impossible to write a biography. They always in Chaim Berlin, Rav Hudnu, everyone knows, was an extremely complex person. Extremely complex. He was deep, he gave over a different, we had a different relationship with every single one of his students. Mm-hmm. Every single one. And in his life, he changed. He every year, he was a different person. So how in the world are you going to write a biography about a person who had a different relationship with every single person every year? How are you going to write? So you have to write 1,000 biographies because it's such complexity.
The family is very, very marked.
What?
The family is very, very marked.
They don't have control anymore. There are a lot of things that were put out without their permission. And the people, they said, well, you can't tell us what to do. We were Talmidim. He's my Rebbe. I could do what I want. I don't need your permission. There are a lot of things that came out without their permission. I don't want to tell you all the names, but
see, our school has no such book.
Our school, because he's too complex.
Yeah.
He's too complex to write.
The same thing.
Maybe one day they will. You know, yeah, also, time heals all wounds. Mm-hmm. So after time passes, a lot of what was once Lashon Hara is no longer Lashon Hara. It's like the CIA, they open up all of the secret files. How are they allowed to do that? It's not gay anymore. It's not relevant anymore. So now let the world know this, the truth. Let the world know. No, it doesn't make a difference. It's the same thing with Gedolei Yisrael. A lot of them, you really can't write a biography about them immediately. There's too much controversy. You wait 50 years, then Adarabba.
It blows over.
Then, it not only blows over, Adarabba, then it becomes very relevant. All of the Lashon Hara, it's now Lashon Hara. And Adarabba becomes relevant and very important to understand these things. So maybe one day, Okay, that's the way the world is. Like our Catholic, he always talks about Rav Yosha Bar Soloveitchik. He holds him to be his favorite Talmud. So he always says, the Rav that I knew is not the Rav of everyone else. I knew him in these years. It was the Rav of the 70s, was not the Rav of the 60s. Was not the Rav of the 50s. Was certainly not the Rav of the 80s. For sure not. Wow. And the 90s, he was already out of it altogether. So he always says, he was a different person. A whole different person. A different world. And, you know, each person relates. Look, they even say about Ben-Gurion. I read this book, some Ben-Gurion. So, I just blew my mind. I read this one of the Gedolim. They said, there were three Ben-Gurions. Every time someone tells him about Ben-Gurion, either either if it's a Tzioni, they'll sing his praises, and if he's not a Tzioni, they'll say otherwise. So a Gadol said about him, there were three Ben-Gurions. There's the Ben-Gurion before 48, before the establishment of the state. It was a whole different person. Then there was the Ben-Gurion, the Prime Minister of Israel, from 48 until when was he Prime Minister? And even afterwards. And after he was very involved. Even after he was very, very involved. And then when he retired, he left politics, and Rahman al-Islam, he was in a nursing home. It was a completely, completely different person. And when you go take a statement, some people will take statements, things that he said when he was in a nursing home, and he was very bitter, he was very old and very sick, and he said certain things. And they're going to make believe he said he'll take a quote from him from when he was in a nursing home a year before he died, and they'll make it sound like he said this in the year 1948 when they established State of Israel. So a Gadol said, very one of the Haredi Gadolim said this. He says, that's not fair. That's totally not fair to go take what he said when he was senile, old, and sick. And you'll write in a book, you'll read in a Haredi book, you know what Ben-Gurion said? You would think when he said this when he was in 1940 in the establishment of the State of Israel, this is what he said. That's not fair. It's not the truth. He said it. Well, he says certain things which are horrifying, but it's not right. It's not fair to go. There's three. He needs help.
He has someone helping him.
Open the back door. It's locked. The back door's locked? Today is... They don't knock it open enough. That's all. He has an aid. Okay, so it's not... You have to be very, very careful. Times change. Everything has to be understood in the context of the times. Let's go further in the Mitzudos. Okay, let's go further in the Mitzudos. We're in the middle of the finish the Mitzudos here. The Mayan on page 261. Let's try to finish the Mitzudos. The Mayan, who it's ready, Pasuk Yutes. Pasuk Yutes says, Mitzrayim heim hoyu roish. Ha-mit-sikim li-Yisrael. These were the antagonists, the enemy number one.
Insiders.
The Edom, heim-soif ha-mit-sikim. So he's saying something very beautiful, which is a lot of the first will elaborate upon this. Why are we singling out in the times of Mashiach two nations, Egypt and Edom? And the answer is the first and the last, and everyone in between. Don't think only these two nations are going to get what they deserve. There are plenty of nations that are in between in history that are going to get what they deserve. We're only singling. Egypt was the first one to persecute us. That was the template, as Ramchal will teach us, is that in Mitzrayim, all four of the Dalet Malchios, or the prototype, are all there in Mitzrayim. And then we come to Edom. Edom is the last. That's today. What does this mean to say? They're all going to get what they deserve. They'll get their punishment. Every nation from the beginning to the end. From the first, what's the word in the translation? How do you translate the word Mitzikim? The first insider to the last. Mechamas, bigmul as a punishment, mechamas the violence. This refers to Edom. Asher shafu to the lema b'levad mashachargu mehem be'es nilchamu. Gamoy sifu oyd l'shpach damam b'chol yimei hadayrois. Throughout all of the generations, they have spilled our blood and all the horrors of the events of this of Golus, whether it's the pogroms, whether it's the blood libels, the Holocaust, the Inquisition, expulsions, and the evil czars of Russia, and all the terrible, terrible things that happened throughout history. Le'olam teyeshev tiskayim le'olam lo'osechav. Oh, then Yerushalayim will be established forever. That's Tzion. Yehudam, so Yehudam. Yerushalayim kafal adavar. Poetic repetition. Now here's the last pasuk. We'll just read with the mitzvah stuff. This will stop, and the mission tomorrow will continue. And don't this. I want to warn you, is not the only parish. In fact, let me just deviate for one moment. Look at the Rid. The Rid is, to me, the most satisfying, the most poshut translation. The Mitzvah Stavid, I believe, is not, I think it's more of a drush. It's a very heavy thing, what he says. We learned last week, but the Rid, on the right side, on page 260, few words, Perish Harid, towards the bottom, he says, you're missing a letter in this pasuk. V'ni kesi damam she loy ni kesi. Not that it's missing a letter, but make believe there's a missing shin. And I think Hashem is saying, even though for 2,000 years, 2,000 plus years, I've been patient. I've been so patient. I have not exacted vengeance, punished them for their sins. The day of reckoning is come. Vini Casey. Now, there are two ways to translate it, only two ways. That's what we're going to learn. Either it means revenge, nokom, nun kuf. The shorish of nun means nokom, exact vengeance. Nakama, revenge, punishment, suffering, punishment, payday. Mida keneged mida, tashlum gimol, or it means noki, innocent, free, forgiveness. Is the yud part of the shorish? Is the yud not part of the shorish? What about the vowels? It seems like that's not an issue. For some reason, the vowels, but either it's going to mean noki, I will declare you innocent, or the yud is not part of the shorish. The only shorish here is the nun and the kuf. It means nokom, punishment.
When it's innocent, then it's nun kuf
hey.
Yeah,
right. I'm not sure. Okay, but here it's a different form. In any event, that's going to be the big debate among Mepharshim. What is the translation? But right now, we're going to translate it to mean punishment. Vini kesi damam, comma. Put the word damam together with the word vini kesi. It's critical. Don't separate those two words. Hashem says, when Mashiach will come, I will punish the blood. I will punish the goyim for the blood that they've spilled amongst the Jewish people. Sheloini kesi, which thus far, throughout our galus, I've held back, and I have not yet punished, avenged. Vini kesi damam, sheloini kesi. That's how the Rid, pashut. That's how the Rid teaches the word. Both words, nikesi, mean punishment, and there's no free lunch here. They're going to get what they deserve. Make believe there is a shin. Almost all of the Mepharshim don't learn like that. They learn there's going to be, the first Nikesi means innocence. I will declare you innocent. And we break the word right there, Vinikesi. Hashem says, Goyim, Edom, and Mitzrayim, I'm going to forgive you. Noki, you will go off scot-free. For what? For stealing the assets, the money of the Jewish people. Kama. But Domom? For killing the Jewish people? No. That loni kesi. That's how the mitzvah, this virtually everyone learns of Shach. Let's see. Vini kesi, if the mitzvah says the word tzoyne loymar, he's basically apologizing to you and telling you what I'm about to tell you is not the literal, is not the literal translation, and we have no choice here but to inject words and a perush that does not really appear in the pasuk. But we have no choice. We have to make sense of the pasuk. Return to Leimar. Even though she'anake esol umos, I'm going to forgive them. Noki me'avoyin hechomos, the violence of Masha Yisrael Yeshuvu. Why? Because they're going to give it back to us. So what? and give it back to us now. What about the last 2,000 years? All of the people who they stole from are no longer here. They died. So what does that mean? They're going to give it back to the... Why is that satisfying? Why does that help make a difference? We forgive Germany because they gave us reparations. They gave us some money. We forgive them. We don't forgive them for nothing. For nothing. Just because they gave money to establish the state of Israel. Who cares? It means nothing. What does it say over here in this pasuk? Because they're going to give back the money. They're going to give them money. They're going to buy us off. It's very, very hard to swallow what he's saying. I'm sorry. For me, it's very hard to swallow. We're going to take it back. Oh, all is forgiven. We're going to, therefore, Hashem will forgive them for stealing our money. But the blood, that loyanake. The koifer moment, just because you, by giving money, if they'll even try to pay us off, we're not going to accept money. They're going to have to die. This means to say, don't be afraid that when the government find out that their days are numbered and they're going to be obliterated, that they're going to try to go to war against us and to prevent it from happening. When they read this, so the goyim will get very scared, what it says over here. So they'll try to defend themselves, they'll try to attack us in order that this should not happen. Klal Yisrael, don't worry, I'm in charge. They can do all they want, I'm protecting you. Means power. They will not have any power to touch us, to harm us. Hashem will protect us even after the goyim read these words. Domam lo nikesi, they get very scared. They read what it says in Yoel, they get scared. Hashem says, don't worry, I'm in charge here. I'm the balabas here. Hashem, Sheikhein Bitsiyan, what?
They're trying to do it now.
For generations, they're trying to do it. That's a very novel parish.
The Abravanel says it's not exactly what I just said, not exactly that they'll forgive them for taking money. It says because we also took money from them. In other words, we were guilty of stealing money as well as they took from us, we took from them. But we never went out and killed them.
When we took from them, we never took from them. Why do you say we took from them?
No, but it was. It's just that we are guilty of
what?
Also, but not
cheating our taxes.
I guess, whatever.
Being too lenient, too liberal on your tax return.
On some level, it's but it's not
with the program.
Program section eight.
But we were not guilty of murder.
It's hard. It's a hard stretch.
I know.
Just because we
That's why he is who he is.
When you go lease a car, they ask you, the bank, how much do you make? you only make $80,000. The bank is not going to let you lease the car if you only make $80,000. So write down you make $85,000. You know how many? And you sign documents. You know how many laws you've just violated? A wire fraud, federal laws. If they tell you, the bank will not.
Hey, it got your basket in 27 years.
Yeah, it's not a joke. Exactly. It got you signed that. I can't write down here. You only make what you make because they'll never lease you a car. What about every Tom, Dick, and Harry is leasing a car over here? So they did the same thing. They lied. So you lie a few dollars on the line. They didn't even tell you. Just sign over here. You know how many federal, state, and city laws you violate? They can put you away for 100 years. They really can. And if they want to, they will.
They will. Just don't work for Trump.
Just don't be a politician who have enemies. If you have enemies, they can get you. It's unbelievable. Okay.